Welcome to Two Peas in a Pod, the podcast designed for parents on the go.
I'm Dr. Julie Cardos.
And I'm Dr. Naylene Lai.
We are two board-certified pediatricians and parents like you.
Don't have the time or energy to read pediatric advice.
If you're in the carpool line,
trying to grab some exercise,
or cleaning the house,
plug us in.
Hi, this is Dr. Lai, and today we're going to give you a bunch of hot summer tips. I know that it is summer in Pennsylvania because it's a good 50 degrees right now in the spring, and my daughter has insisted on wearing flip-flops every single day. So what are we going to talk about today?
I thought we'd start out with some Lyme disease tips, just quick little tidbits. Especially in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, we get asked a lot about Lyme disease. And actually, one of the most common things I get asked is, how do I know my child has Lyme disease?
Most of the time, about 90% of the time, your child will get a rash with Lyme. So let's just talk about that early rash, what we'd be looking for. None of the other symptoms or any of the later symptoms that could occur.
How long does a rash last? How do we find it? Is it tiny? Does it come really quickly and go away and we might miss it?
If you have a rash, you won't miss it. There is always a possibility that the tick was in the hair or in a hidden place, like maybe the groin, that you might miss it. But if you really do bug checks every single day on your kids, you shouldn't miss anything.
Yeah, and I always found, Dr. Lai, a convenient thing about the rash of Lyme disease is that it only gets bigger. So, you know, when you pull a tick off of a child, you get that little red area, and that's just a little hypersensitivity spot from pulling the tick out, like your skin gets irritated. But the true rash of Lyme disease is circular, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, meaning bigger than a silver dollar, bigger than a half dollar, bigger than a pancake, if you don't treat it.
It is always bigger than 2.5 inches across for a primary tick bite.
In that sense, it's never an emergency. So if you're bathing your child at 10 o'clock at night and suddenly notice the rash, it will still be there tomorrow. So you can always wait to bring your child in to the pediatrician the next day.
Now, if you notice it comes and then it goes within a day or two, it was actually more of an irritation from having a little bug there than anything else.
The other important point I think for parents to know is that while we can see the rash and we can diagnose it and we can treat your child, and it's usually 2 or 3 weeks of antibiotics and they're done. You don't need blood work to diagnose Lyme disease. In fact, often I tell my patients' parents the blood work often is negative. It won't show anything that early in the course of Lyme disease. So I'm going to believe what the child looks like rather than blood work.
Now, the rash itself is flat. It's never bumpy and raised. It can be a big patch, like a red, light red patch, usually oval-shaped or at least circular. It also can become like a bullseye. You can have a clearing in the middle, and sometimes that clearing can even have a little bit of redness in the middle.
The other thing that's, I think, important to know is when you pull the tick out of the child, and again, remember, Lyme disease is carried by a deer tick, which is about the size of a sesame seed. But if you pull the tick out, but you leave the head in by mistake, the head is still dead, so you're not going to still transmit any Lyme disease, and the kid's body will eventually just spit out the head, just like a teeny tiny little splinter will often just get extruded from the body without much work on your part.
For dog ticks, too, even though dog ticks mainly do not carry Lyme, but they're pretty ugly, and we often see people panicking because there's a little head caught in there.
And the last little tidbit is Lyme disease is only present in about 1% of deer ticks. Although we hear a lot about it, that's because there's a lot of deer ticks, only 1% of the deer ticks actually have Lyme disease. The tick has to have been on the child for at least 48 hours to have transmitted any disease.
So if you do bug checks every day, you should be able to get one of those little critters off. So that's all about the rash of Lyme disease, or at least some tidbits. There are other symptoms that you can see with early Lyme disease, such as achiness and low-grade fever. We really didn't talk about them here. And there are other symptoms that you can get with late-onset disease. And again, we didn't really address them. So onward to another summer rash.
Okay, let's talk about poison ivy. And the number one myth that gets perpetuated among parents, children, sometimes other healthcare providers, is the rash of poison ivy contagious? Luckily, the answer is no. You cannot get poison ivy from another person. The only way you get poison ivy is from exposure to the plant. So children with poison ivy can go to school, they can go to camp, they can go to sleepovers at their friend's house. The one thing is, of course, these itchy children are itchy, and so they might have trouble concentrating in school. We do like to treat the itch of poison ivy. I've seen all sorts of weird, sometimes bizarre ways of treating poison ivy. People tell me, oh, I use bleach on their skin to get rid of the fluid, or I've use, you know, all sorts of strange concoctions. Honestly, it's just getting rid of itch. So hydrocortisone is a great medicine for itch to put on the skin. Benadryl is a good oral medicine to give your children before they go to sleep so they're not scratching in their sleep. But again, you can't get poison ivy from another child or another person.
It's Dr. Lai again. Another hint we have is once you do have contact with poison ivy, it's the oil that makes you itchy. So it looks like the poison ivy might be spreading, but what really happens is that wherever the oil touched, your child may start to react at different points.
Yeah, it gets confusing because parents tell their kids, don't scratch, you'll spread it. But what's happening is if you got the most exposure on one part of your body and a smaller exposure somewhere else, poison ivy rash can break out over several days, even up to a week to 10 days.
So what can you do to prevent poison ivy? Well, unfortunately, about 80% of all people are allergic to poison ivy. So there's a good chance your kid is one of them. But if you know your kid got into some poison ivy, you can go ahead and shower your child off. You don't have very long. You have about 15 minutes to get that poison off before it starts to react with the skin. But you can definitely stick them in a shower. Now, don't put them in the bathtub. If you put them in a bathtub, that oil actually will float around in the water instead of washing down a drain and actually get all over their body instead of in just in one spot.
Okay, this is Dr. Cardas again. Yeah, my last thoughts on poison ivy. It is kind of goofy who's allergic and who isn't. I'll never forget, all growing up, I was always partners with my same girlfriend in grade school, and we would always take a class trip. It was to this kind of foresty, outdoor nature place, and every year, my poor partner would always get poison ivy terribly from head to toe, and I never ever got a rash. And clearly we were exposed to the same plants because, you know, it's his grade school, you're holding hands with your partner the whole time during the trip. Okay, so our last topic is sunscreen. Dr. Lai, what is the worst sunburn you've ever seen in a child?
Oh, sunburns are just as bad as burns that you can get if you touch the stove. I've seen blistering red sunburns, which are actually worse than some of the burns that I've seen in kids who've touched something hot.
And then this is Dr. Cardas. What is SPF anyway?
SPF is a number. It stands for sun protection factor. Basically, it just gives us an idea of how many times longer it would take for your child to get sunburn.
Right. So SPF of 15 means however long it would take your child to get a sunburn, you're stalling that for 15 times as much as that would take. It's recommended to wear at least 15 or higher. So 15, 30, 45. I had a mom ask me, I've heard they just came out with SPF of 100. And I'm thinking, well, then you could wear a wool jacket probably, and that would also protect you from sunburn. But that's not practical in the summertime. The important point is you have to reapply sunscreen, whether it's waterproof or not, no matter how high the number, you want to reapply. Apply it. It does wash off in the pool. It does wash off sweating. So every couple hours you'll be applying whether you're wearing 15 or 30 or 45.
So it doesn't really matter how high the number is, because even if you have a longer period of protection against the sun, it won't matter because you have to reapply it anyway before that time is up.
This is Dr. Cardas. Again, another question I get asked is, can I use sunscreen on my infant? In fact, while we used to not recommend sunscreen on babies younger than 6 months, we also know that young infants' skin is very prone to sunburn because it's thinner than an older baby's skin. The best way to protect sunburn in a very young baby is to keep them covered, to keep them in the shade, to keep them under a canopy. But I remember walking my kids as babies, their feet would poke out from the stroller and their socks never stayed on. So feet, hands, top of the head, those are places that you still apply sunscreen in your young infant if they are going to be out in the sun.
Okay, that concludes our podcast today. We've given you a bunch of hopefully helpful summer hints. Today we talked about the rash of Lyme. We talked about the rash of poison ivy, as well as the rash of the sun.
Okay, so I'm Dr. Julie Cardas.
And I'm Dr. Naylene Lai.
We are two peas in a pod. Right now, our recording studio is our kitchen table, and we depend on you to tell your friends about us.
We are two pediatrician moms who know you have questions after you've left our office.
Think of us as your innovative resource for sound pediatric advice.
Please check out our website, www.twopedsinapod.com. That's TWOPEDSINAPOD.
We hope to use our blog and podcast to help answer your questions and make you more confident parents. Thank you for listening.